good afternoon. And well, now we are moving to the first and second dimensions of the porous society again. If we use the typology that was suggested by Alessandro. Just a second. And I will tell you the story and then try to conceptualize it. I want to start with the short prologue, saying that, you know, Russia is not the country who is sending out migrants. It is the country that is attracting a lot of migrants. And these migrants are very different. Many of them are labor migrants from the states of the Commonwealth of Independent States, the former countries that belong to the Soviet Union, to this empire. Then there are Russians who come from these CIS states to Russia. There are other people who use this huge space of Russia as a platform for the further flow to the east or to the west. And my idea here is to attract your attention to the Russian as huge migration space. And not only external migration is very important to this society, but also internal migration, trans-regional migration, and it is part of the Russian everyday life today. So I will tell you about this case of trans-regional migration from the peripheral part of Russian Federation to the center, to the capital, to Moscow. And just to remind those of you who read Chekhov from the Three Sisters, to Moscow, but now it is the case not to coming back to Moscow, but to come there in order to improve life chances. And so the story of migration is to Moscow, but from Kalmykia. It is the ethnic republic of Russia. I will tell you shortly about it. And it is the story of Natasha, a breadwinning single mother from Kalmykia, who is selling multiple caring skills in Moscow. And it is the story about porous society, literally, because trans-regional migration is migration without borders and without visas. But it is a dramatic story, it is problematic, a life trajectory, there are barriers, there are precarities of this life of a migrant person in the context of trans-regional gender-centric, from periphery to central migration. So several words about Kalmykia. This is the map of Kalmykia. It belongs to the southern region of Russia, and it is near the Caspian Sea of the east. Here close you see Central Asian, Kazakhstan, and on the left you see Stavropol, and here it is Northern Caucasian area, Chechen Republic. So here you see Caspian Sea, Black Sea, and Elistan, which is the capital of Kalmykia. I'm showing it with the cursor. Do you see it? Yes. Just in the middle of this triangle. Kalmykia is one of the three Buddhist republics. It is here now on the left, and the religion is Tibetan Buddhist, and now we witness revival of this religious movement. For example, here is the picture of the president of Russia, Putin, the president of Kalmykia, Ilyushinov, who is on the post for the 20 years now. He is here, and Buddhist from Kalmykia. What else about Kalmykia? Kalmykia has this history of the political oppression when a lot of Kalmyks were exiled from their territory from 44 to 57. Then the republic gets its status as autonomous Republic of Russia again. Traditionally, they are pasture nomads, and they speak Kalmykian language, which is a type of Mongolian languages, and it is bilingual country. They have two official languages and bilingual society, but basically, and Russification was so efficient there that they all speak very pure Russian, and there are a lot of efforts this state is doing in order to revive original Kalmykian language. It is very important for our story. So, so it is a small country inside Russia. You see the figures, and it is urbanized, but rural population is the majority. Its quality of life is considered to be one of the lowest in the country. See the average life expectancy for men, 59.6, for women, 72.4. It is even worse than average Russian. Ethnical structure, Kalmyks Russians are the two larger groups with the prevalence of Kalmyks and others, including Kazakhs and Chechens. And these are the data from the census of 2002. And the statistics shows negative southern migrations. A lot of people are flowing from Kalmykia to the center of Russia for better life. So in order to understand the context of Kalmykia, I have to say that there are push factors for economic migration, because it is the poorest region with the lowest wages, with the huge inflation, with huge unemployment, where two-thirds of unemployed are women, and it is agrarian profile unemployment. So there is a lot of motivation of people to travel, and in the discourse about Kalmykian migration and in the research which is being conducted on this particular issue, which is not much, we see that Kalmyks are looking at themselves as the nation which is capable of migration because of nomadic past, because of the local practices of odkhodnichestvo, I don't know this word in English, which means that part of the population regular during seasons go to the other places to sell their labor. And it is since 18th century. Shuttle traders, they were very active in shuttle trade during perestroika. And now they are transregional guest workers with Russian passport, so they have legal citizenship rights and legal right to work. And in Russian, people who are coming to sell their labor are called, in German fashion, Gastarbeiter. Everybody knows this word, and Gastarbeiter, it is a guest workers, which is very particular imagery of labor migrants, which has its migrantophobic stereotypes, I would say. So how Kalmyk migrants are organized, I would say there are two levels, official and informal levels of diaspora work. There are official cultural centers which in Moscow, which organizes, publishes newsletters regularly, organizes cultural events and holidays for Kalmyk diaspora. But there is a provisional diaspora of Kalmyks, which is organized around the transportation system, because there is a bus traveling to Elista, the capital of Kalmykia, every day, and the distance is 1,222 kilometers, and it takes 20 hours by bus, and it is the only way to travel. And so this vokzal, this bus station, is the center for all kind of informal communication, advertisement, and there is close The market for the Kalmykian products, especially meat, they are meat eaters as they call themselves. Information exchange, help in housing, job search, medical health is provided through this informal network. Kalmyk migrants are visible because of racial difference, because they are Mongolians. It's the only Mongolian nation in Europe. And they are competing with international migrants from the former countries of the Commonwealth of Independent States because they demand more money, being legal Gastarbeiter. So Kalmyk migration takes place in the context of migrant aphobia in Russia, which is fixed by all kinds of quantitative and qualitative social research. This migrant aphobia is obviously ethnicized and gendered. And the targets of this migrant aphobia, one of the target groups, is this Gastarbeiter. And those Gastarbeiter who are visible and who are visible in groups, not only individually, but in groups in the large cities. The main flows, according to statistics, are from Caucasus and from Central Asia. And these migrants are transregional, so from the northern Caucasus, which belongs to Russia, like Dagestan, for example, or Chechnya, and also transnational, from Armenia and Azerbaijan, for example. But population, local dwellers, residents of Moscow, they won't recognize between transregional and transnational migrants. They will generalize, and in their migrantophobia, they can common image of the person of Caucasian nationality, as it is being called, and as it is being identified in media discourse, or the person from Asian nationality, as it will be called. So migrant workers are ascribed the following features. All these features are on the list. You can read it. So generally speaking, it is the threat to the public order of proper Moscow, yes? So anti-Caucasian attitudes prevail. Research shows that population is more tolerant towards Russian-speaking migrants of Slavic origin, and it all takes place in the climate. This everyday xenophobia and everyday migrantophobia is taking place, is developing with the growth of radical nationalist groups and with the more often cases of terrorist attacks in Moscow. So the situation is risky and migrant people feel vulnerable, but still they come and live and stay and migrate to Moscow. And so this was only the context to begin with. And this is Natasha. Natasha is 51. She was born in Elistar, in the capital of Kalmykia, yes, and she considers herself a Buddhist. She's a very attractive woman. She has high school education and education of the musical college. She was for 12 years, she was singing in the folklore choir of Kalmyks, which is very famous, which traveled around the Soviet Union. She was married two times and two times divorced. She has a son who is 18, and currently he is a second year student of the medical university in Moscow. And after she had to quit her artistic career in the beginning of the 90s because they paid very small money, and she was a single mother who had to be a breadwinner to grow her son. Yes, she was born in the family with six children. She has five sisters and one brother. And all this is important for her opportunities to travel to migrate to Moscow. So I conducted several interviews with her, and I somehow observed her life history and collect the pieces from her life stories. So one of the main ideas, the main leitmotifs is her story as a breadwinning mother. So she, after second divorce, 6 years ago, she moved to Moscow to earn money. Her son was at that time 12 years old, and she couldn't bring him to her, with her. She left him in Elista, in the family of her elder sister and his husband. So she's saying that actually they wanted that she to adopt this boy from the very beginning, because she was a single mother without a husband who left her on the day of the delivery. And it was considered to be proper and good, according local tradition, not to leave all the burdens of parenting to the single mother without housing, without breadwinning help, without anything in Elista, but to give this son to the head of the huge kin and their family, taking into account that their children are already grown up and it is a boy, which is also important here. You can read all this. Yes, I am just commenting that his name is Garma. Yes, he is a precious child because she has several miscarriages, and according to Kalmykian and Russian standard, he gave birth to him quite old, when she was quite old, in her 30s. Yes, so she is doing everything. She is going to Moscow. She's living this precarious life because of her mother, duty of the breadwinning mother. Another leitmotif of her story is the help of her kin, of her extended by demand family. Yes, she lived separately from them since she was 18, since she finished her medical college. She was two times divorced, she was traveled, but her ties with her many, many relatives of the first and second and third row are very strong. And the exchange of mutual help and support, material, emotional, social, cultural, is extremely strong. And she said that the main, the strongest ties now are with the second level cousins, the third level cousins. The ties are not as strong as they used to be. And she is very sad about it because here she sees nuclearization. And I will give you the example, which is not in the text here. She was telling that now she doesn't want to come back to Elista because very soon it will be the svadba, the wedding of her relative, of her third cousin. But this wedding is supposed to be organized in such a way that every participant gives a huge amount of money. And her Russian friend was saying, oh, it is so good for you that you are from Kalmyk society, because in my case, I have to pay for the wedding. Only we parents have to pay to contribute. And here you have the whole kin. So she was missing that this, you know, kinship ties are getting weaker, nuclearization takes place, but still still it is the case. And in her case, you see that she sent, she gave away her Garma, her son, who has Tibetan name, which is so important for her, because Dalai Lama actually gave him this name. And so, but he was 3 years he spent in the family of her brother-in-law, and while she was earning money, sending this remittance money, commuting every now and then, and he calls her relatives Avva Viktor and Gaga Rosa. Avva means grandfather, Gaga means grandmother, though they're uncle. the story of her work, which took many, many pages and hours, is the story of precarious life, literally. So, because she is a breadwinning mother in this strange society where she's considered to be non-citizen and a stranger. She's combined private and public caring jobs. First, she worked on the factory, on the conveyor, but it was such a difficult work, such non-healthy conditions, that no local residents were employed there. So, and they paid very small. So she gave up this job, and through her friends of Kalmykian origin, who had moved to Moscow much earlier than she did, she found these jobs of child caring person, elderly care, and she also worked in the hotels, and she is making massage, and all her jobs are informal. She never used agencies, and only one job is formal, the job of courier, who is really working in travel agency, tourism is here, and bringing tickets and visas and passports to the people, courier in the travel agency. And it was, very important for her to choose this official job because it allows her legitimately to enter the houses and the places where she get to know people, and they ask her, because she's so charming and nice, to work for them as a cleaning woman. So just working as a courier is the way to develop her social capital. So through this work, she found at least five of her clients, independent of the kin and friends and her other social context. She is the leitmotiv of her story, of her jobs, is the gendered character, her gendered socialization, or her Kalmyk femininity and traditional femininity, which is selling out in the caring work. She's describing the character of her work and how she was cleaning and how she was taking care of children and how her clients found her. This is the quotations. We are a large family. We learned to clean and cook in the childhood. I always helped my mom. I took care of my nieces. They call me nanny. Now, my nieces, they come here, stay with me. I find temporal work for them. Sorry for my misprinting. She means her clients, sympathize me. They see that I'm smiling. I'm playing with children on the playground. I can do many things, clean and cook and iron, sing, dance. Kids love me. They means clients, recommend me. I never go to the domestic labor agencies. Provisional clients call me. My employees recommend me to their friends, relatives who need. So you see how she is definite about the skills which she got in her childhood and which are in demand and on the market of the household work. So, as I told you, in her life as a migrant woman in Moscow, Natasha encounters racism and migrantophobia. But it is not, there are special situations where it is very acute. And it is not in the situation in her job, because her clients, they are very supportive, and she openly says that there is nothing racist in their attitudes. But it is in the housing, in the house where she stays, among neighbors and administrators of this housing cooperative, she experiences xenophobic, anti-migrant, and racist attitudes. Here there is a story, I think you all can read it. So what I'm saying, it is this everyday life migrantophobia intersected with racism. Yes, it is in this porous society, it has its concrete situations. And very often it is not the situation of employment, because otherwise they won't employ her, but the situation of everyday life and leisure. And this is the background of her life. She is living in the center of Moscow in the two-room apartment of which she rents from the family of her former client who passed away. And she took care of him for several years. First, she encountered these very discriminative attitudes from the head of this cooperative. But then she managed to find a person with whom she shared the apartment. And this person is Slavic in her appearance, but from Elesta, which is Kalmykia. So she found this person from Kalmykia, who lives now with her in Moscow, and she's very happy about it. Because this person, I don't know, let me call her Nina, don't remember her name, don't know her name. This Nina never attracts any critical or attention on behalf of the household administration, and this is very helpful to Natasha herself. So, Natasha, how to conceptualize this story? Yeah, because this is almost all in a very nutshell. I want to just to give the last hint from the day before yesterday when I caught her last time. Natasha is going to the United States now for 3 weeks. As a Buddhist, because Dalai Lama, who is of Kalmyk origin and he's in Washington, will be giving his training, medical and spiritual training in Washington. And Kalmyk diaspora in Moscow organized the paid travel there. She managed to collect 66,000 rubles. I cannot calculate it in euros, but it is a huge sum. And she managed to organize all formal documents, though it is almost impossible, but she used all her friends and contacts to get proper documents that were which she submitted to the embassy, American embassy in Moscow, and the American embassy in Moscow gave her visa, but didn't give the visa to the friend of hers who initiated this trip. So she is very happy about it. So how to conceptualize this story? Okay, we know that it is porous society. Okay, we know that it is transregional. We know that it is labor migration, but which becomes, initially, it was considered to be seasonal. Initially, it was considered to be commuting, but now she is stable resident in Moscow, and probably she won't leave Moscow, though her son is already grown up, and the initial motivation is out. Yes, what I'm saying, I think the concept of identity management could be helpful to understand the strategies which she uses in this migrant life. And this management strategy has two aims, for security on the one hand, and to gain more money, because it is important, she's labor migrant anyway. What is she saying? First, she's claiming, I'm not Gastarbeiter, I'm not guest worker, yes? She is protesting this identification. because this identification is stigmatizing and humiliating. Because, as I showed you when I gave you the context of my grant for them, so she wants that people around and clients and everybody will identify her as not Gastarbeiter, yes? Because she's not a foreigner in this country. Because, and she shows her Russian passport all the time. She brushes, when it is problematized, of course, not all the time, sorry. She speaks very pure Russian and even brushes up her Russian not to have accent. And she's, when she's accused by, for example, this head of the household cooperative, she says, I'm Russian citizen. I'm from Kalmykia. You don't know. Kalmykia belongs to Russia. It is Russian Republic. I have a Russian passport. I'm not a Gastarbeiter. So this is citizenship management, identity management, yes? Then she is managing, she wants to look like a well-off person. This is class management. Because, and so another example from her interview is that she wears dark glasses. She wears branded clothes. She wears jewelry. She wears makeup. She looks like a woman who is pretty well off. Yes, and she buys very rich clothes to her son, and this is made consciously in order to be identified with Gastarbeiter, who are poor, non-clean, and cannot afford. So class management is also here. She identifies herself also as Kalmyk woman, but in her own cultural framework, she says, it is you who call us Kalmyks, but we are Oirats. Western Mongols. We are Buddhists. So it is Kalmyk identification which takes much broader cultural frameworks of Buddhism or of Mongols, or Western Mongols. And the last but not least, she is saying that her dream is to marry a Russian man, and she had a dream, and there is also some person who guessed for her and said that she will for sure marry a Russian man and she doesn't like Kalmyk men. So how she is adapting being a migrant to this racism? She is performing citizenship, she is performing gender, she is disguising ethnicity by class, and she is performing Tibetan Buddhism. I think this society is porous. Let me state. But the borders are reproduced in the minds of people. And Russian society is resistant to this porosity. Yes? And I think that migrants themselves, they also reproduce certain barriers and certain self-identifications in order to get adapted, to get integrated in the society which is permeated by migrantophobia. So thank you for your attention.